I wrote the book Spain, the Inside Story of La Roja's Historic Treble for Backpage Press in about 2013. Oh, by the way, hello, it's Graham. Welcome to the late night post-match version of the big interview at the Euros. Because the book was published in 2013, I deduce that it was in 2012 when I went to Las Rosas to interview the man who was then the director of football for youth development in all of Spanish football. His name is Ginés Meléndez. Ginés Meléndez was never that much of a footballer, somebody who regularly played for and managed the team closest to Andrés Iniesta's heart, which is Albacete. And I suppose he's viewed as something of an eminence gris, the brains trust of Spanish football over the last 20, 25 years. In his time, he's won two coach teams to victory in two under-19 European championships. One of them, the Swine, against Scotland. You'll remember Archie Gemmell's side in, I think, 2006, where standout names, Lee Wallace, hello Simon Ferry, Callum Elliott, Graham Dorans, Gary Kenneth, Mark Reynolds. They went to the final and they were beaten by two goals by Alberto Bueno. And the Spain side contained Barragán, who's still cutting it at the top level in La Liga, a certain Gerard Piqué, Javi Garcia, Diego Capel, Juan Mata, remember him, Esteban the Pirate Granero, Jeffren, who played for Barcelona amongst many, many teams and scored in that famous 5-0 against Real Madrid. And Meléndez also won the under-19 tournament in 2011 in Romania when they beat, how ironic is that, the Czech Republic. And in his team then, just so that you know some of the names, Pablo Sarabia, Gerard De La Feo, certain Alvaro Morata, Paco Alcácer, Dani Carvajal. Why? After a deeply, deeply disappointing night at La Cartuja, when Spain didn't play well, drew against Poland, and now confront a last group game against Slovakia in the same stadium on that same pitch with the firm chance of going out. Why am I mentioning Ginés Meléndez? There are two principal reasons. Firstly, when I went to his office in Las Rosas to talk to him about what was then unbridled Spanish success, he told me that he was going to lecture the next week in Burton at St. George's Park. He was going to try and share knowledge with England, help their development. I was impressed by this and perfectly pleased, but I said, look, I have to ask you, in industry, espionage is a capital crime. Secrecy is massive. We as journalists are told all the time we can't see training because it's vital that secrecy is maintained. Coaches never want their lineups breached before kickoff and so on and so forth. Ginés, why are you going to share? He said, look, we're the leaders at the moment. We're the best at development. We're the best at turning victorious junior teams, winning the Euros at under 17, under 19, under 21 level, into champions. And he was right. At that time, there was a huge amount of club dominance by Spain. Over the next 5, 6, 7 years, that would only increase. I was speaking to him in the year when Spain had just completed their trophy treble. I guess it must have been in autumn that the interview came. Spain having won their third consecutive tournament, which began in 2008 with the Euro, followed up by South Africa, the World Cup. How bloody long ago this seems. How long, just mentioning those triumphs, how long ago it sounds, feels. And then in Kiev, they won Euro 2012. And Ginés said, look, we're ahead, we're the leaders. It's good to share. It's good for the game of football to share. And by the time some of our rivals catch up, we'll have moved on. We'll be ahead of them again. Well, he was wrong. Spain have continued to win junior tournaments at a very steady rate. They're the world's best. If you accumulate all the Euros at junior levels, the various different grades that they've had, Spain are pretty much the dominant force. Not in terms of winning Youth World Cups. They were most recently in the final against England, and despite leading, lost. But at Euros, they've remained prolific. And the players that have won those junior Euros have gone on to sometimes superb club careers and have made it into the senior side. And in fact, the under-21 side, which recently lost the semi-final to Portugal in the Euros, was stripped of, I think, minimum three players, certainly Pedri, Olmo, Ferran Torres. All of them should have been with the under-21 side instead of the senior side. That in itself is a small marker of success. But from 2012 onwards, there have been performances at senior tournaments which are directly linked to the match I've just been working on. Tepid, timid, sometimes bullied physically, often outrun, lacking something. Now, Spain's squad right now remains full of players that would command an absolute astronomical fortune if you tried to buy two or three or four of them. Some of them are so precious to their clubs that they're unbuyable. That being said, this performance against Poland was uneven in the first half when they competed. And when the one glorious moment, if you're of the Spain persuasion, came, there were other glorious moments, but they weren't for Spain. The one glorious moment that nearly puts a smile on my face, and it's hard to stop me from being ebullient. It's hard to prevent me from seeing the patterns, the fun, the creativity, the dilemmas in football, rather than simply being as ticked off as I am tonight. But the bright spot was the fact that Luis Enrique strenuously defended Morata, named him in his team the day before the game, more than 24 hours before the match. That was breaking a habit. And there we get the reward. Alvaro Morata's run was absolutely exquisite. It was really cleverly timed. It was daring. It was a flippant indication exactly of how much the rest of his team lacked that. It was a boost to see Gerard Moreno played in the same team, and him playing on the right, coming onto his left foot, was the means by which the goal was created. Moreno was shooting for goal. I'm quite sure it wasn't a pass, and it wasn't going to beat Chesney. However, Morata's reactions were so quick, and it took VAR to say that it was a legitimate goal. But once that judgment was imparted, you look back at Morata's movement, it's very, very good. Maybe he should do more of it. It wasn't to be his night. And then Morata runs over to the bench and leaps into Luis Enrique's arms. And the Asturian wasn't particularly, I think he liked the idea of a bit of gratitude, but he's not a guy for, he's not a touchy-feely, huggy kind of guy. And there was a moment when Alvaro Morata leapt on him and he kind of was like, yeah, okay, all right, son, but yeah, back off now. And my eye was drawn still more to Morata went to look to the rest of the bench where they, I talked to him, it is now the day before yesterday because this is being recorded as we're into whatever day follows the match day, Sunday, I guess. Friday morning, I spoke to him and I said, look, you've been deluged with cariño, as they say in Spain. Kindness, support, feeling that people have affection for him. And he liked that and he admitted it was good. But he went looking to repay them because when he said that he hadn't had doubts and he's sure he would score, I think he needed to hear people supporting him. I think it made a difference. And him going looking to repay that was a nice little image. It's one of these things that football throws up all the time and it's worth seeing, in my view. But Spain didn't capitalise upon it. There was a repetitive pattern that they were a little bit slower than Poland, that they were put under pressure by Poland, not often robbed. They hugely outpassed Poland. Again, the possession stats were, you know, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, except leaning towards Spain. And I just thought that across the night, Poland bullied them. Did Poland deserve a draw? Yes, at least they did. Their tactics were spot on. Their aggression was untrammeled. When I say bullied them, there isn't a word of complaint about Poland's tactics. For example, early on in my match reporting, minute by minute, I pointed out that Lewandowski had gone and sought out Jordi Alba. Now, that's just plain common sense. Lewandowski is a nine. He likes to play in and around the penalty spot, but he's a leader. Physically, he's a beast. You wouldn't think he's the age he is. He's patently finished in personal terms, the season of his life. Not the season of his life in terms of trophies. He's a recent treble winner under Jupp Heynckes. But he came into this game questioned, doesn't score a lot at major tournaments. He took a little bit of a panning after the Slovakia game because he didn't seem much to be in it. I spoke to one Pole before this match who was like, nah, don't worry about him, he's no threat to you. Okay, yeah. I take that with not just a pinch of salt, but a mine. And Lewandowski and Alba was a really interesting battle for a long time because it was a physical mismatch. Alba had to work double time to try and intercept him, to try and not be surprised by him, not to be outjumped by him. Largely, it seemed to me a really good tactic. And there was a point at which there was a ball across the face of the middle of the park, probably just about 10 minutes before half-time. I think it was Rodri who gave it to Alba. And Alba, one, didn't want it. Two, was gobbled up and not told by any teammate that Poland were on him. And it was the moment that ended with Poland striking the ball off the post and Lewandowski being right there, right on it, and nearly scoring. From the right in the first half, there were times when he managed to shake off Alba, when it looked as if the tactic was going to pay fruit all on its own. Instead, what happened was that in the second half, Poland ran harder, worked harder, were happy to settle for occasional interceptions. They didn't need to be ripping the ball from Spain all the time to believe that the tactics were spot on. They knew. They had the convictions, they had the courage of their convictions, and they played far more daring football than Spain did. The culmination was the cross into Lewandowski comes in a way where, really, to be honest with you, Alba should have defended it better. Secondly, Laporte is a good footballer, a good competitor, somebody who can still, will still make a difference to this side. But he didn't jump, didn't even get off the ground. How he or anybody else had the nerve to complain to referee Orsato, the Italian, that there might have been a foul just seems to me to be a bad joke. And they're pinpointing it, without singling Laporte out for blame, lack of competitiveness. Lack of competitiveness in closing the cross down. Lack of competitiveness in the jump. And then lo and behold, an absolute clear penalty, and it's given. And looking at it, what raced through my mind was being recently in Gdansk, in Poland, of all places, and seeing Villarreal not having practiced penalties, but taking their first ever European title by defeating Manchester United at penalties. Even going as far as Gerald Rulli, the keeper, tucking his away before saving from De Gea. I remember early in this tournament saying to Luis Enrique, what's your idea? Double training sessions? No chance. Practice penalties? He said, well, look, take Villarreal as our example. He said, they don't practice penalties throughout the season as a rule, but they won the shootout. He said, I asked the players, do you want to practice penalties? And they said, yes. So they do. I sensed, or at least it felt like I sensed, in the run-up from Gerard Moreno, this will be the one that he misses. After a good season where he tucked away several penalties in his top Spanish scorer in La Liga award, and the fuss about the Villarreal penalties winning in Gdansk, and then me asking Luis Enrique about practicing penalties or not, and him saying, you can practice as much as you want and muscle memory might be a thing, but you can't replicate the pressure of the big... Oh, yeah. No, you can't. Moreno hits the post. Morata scuffs the rebound over. Szczesny's had a bit of luck, I guess, that maybe he deserves, because in the first game against Slovakia, the shot he dives at comes back, bounces into the goal off his back, and it's called an own goal. So maybe he deserved something. Best of luck to him. But from that moment onwards, Spain played with nerves. They were increasingly lacking in efficacy. They continued to be efficient, and that's the crucial thing. The Spain side is very efficient. I got taught when I was young, if you're efficient, it isn't necessarily a compliment, because what was said to me was a production line could efficiently carry on producing something, but if there isn't the distribution method at the end of the production line and the boxes or the gadgets or the gizmos or the widgets that keep coming off the production line fall into the floor, it's very efficient, but it's not effective. And I'm sad to say that's where Spain are right now. There were one or two moments when they might have scored, yes, but there's an edge missing, and it's not just an edge in front of goal. It's a hardness. It's a winner's gritty. I'm not accepting defeat. I'm taking you on, looking at their opponent. I'm beating you man to man. I'm helping my teammate. I've used the anecdote before, but it's true, and I think it sheds light on what's going on right now. At the end of the equally disappointing World Cup in Russia, when they went out on, let me think again, penalties, Iniesta was playing his last match. We had this interview. As it was being conducted, Carlos Marchena, victorious in Euro 2008, victorious in the World Cup in 2010, walked by, stopped. And as the interview finished, I turned to him and said, listen, here we go, mate, out again. And he said, well, look, now people will maybe understand what we did and how hard it is to win a World Cup. And he wasn't slagging this performance in Russia off. He was pointing out that they had special people. When they had these moments, like Spain suffered in France, in the Euro, in Brazil, in Russia, and now, and remember they did, remember the feeling, remember the antipathy, do you remember the criticism, the pressure after the defeat to Switzerland in the World Cup with Andres Iniesta being carried off when Lichtsteiner went right through him like a flipping cruise liner through a rowing boat? That was tough. That was heated. There was finger jabbing. There was opprobrium. The players could have buckled and they didn't. And something is missing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That I'm having this discourse at on a week when Sergio Ramos left Real Madrid seems to me important. I have no quibbles about Luis Enrique leaving Sergio Ramos out. Was it purely because of his fitness, or was it because of a certain sparks flying between the two of them in the March internationals? I think it's the latter. But I have no criticism whatsoever, and nor did Ramos when he was offered the chance to do so. The point I'm making is that in assessing Sergio Ramos's greatness for Real Madrid, I used the phrase that Real Madrid weren't just buying a special footballer when they brought him from Seville, they were buying a force of nature. But in their way, Iker Casillas, force of nature. Senna, force of nature. Iniesta, Xavi, forces of nature. David Villa, all-time top scorer for La Roja. Force of nature. Luis Aragonés in 2008, force of nature. Puyol, let's not even talk about it. We aren't only talking about quality of football. This Spain side is replete with footballers who love the ball, use it well, and are frankly are special. Is it maybe that there's an inexperience across the squad, that it's still relatively young? Is it maybe that because of their over-reliance on technique, when they are tired at the end of a long season and other sides who haven't got that technique are accustomed to running their legs off, that makes a difference? Yeah, that can certainly be part of it. And also, if you want to give me a reach out virtually, because everything's done virtually now, don't you know, by Zoom and give me a slap around the chops and say, Portugal 4 years ago and look what they did, and it wasn't even 4 years. Yes, they scored only 4 goals in the group and they went through with 3 draws, the last of which where they were clinging on to the flipping every sinew of Hungary as they try to knock them out of the tournament. Yeah, yeah, whatever. Maybe Spain go through the group. Yeah, maybe they go on and win this. Yeah, no danger. Through, possibly, potential winners, potential Portugal. Don't kid me on. So what's lacking? I don't know how you replicate it. That hardness, steeliness, the ability to not just produce greatness, but force a win, to play killer passes in all zones of the pitch when you've got no time to think, to take risks, millisecond risks, and pull them off. Is it only the pitch that's to blame? No, it ain't. Look, work goes on, life goes on. It's also the case that sometimes, and this Spain side proved this last November when they drew 1-1 with Switzerland away, missed 2 penalties. Luis Enrique said, you've no idea what's coming soon. And they went out and beat Germany 6-0. Sometimes we put our fingers in the air, we feel the wind direction, and our weather forecast is completely wrong. All reporters, all writers have to admit that. It can happen. In this instance, I don't think that is what's happening. I think that there is a big risk that Spain go out on Wednesday. On balance, I think they avoid that. On balance, I think they go through. Should they finish second in the group? I have no bloody idea where they're going to be playing, because I was counting on them winning this group, and they should have done. That they haven't, is an indication, or that they haven't yet put themselves top of the group, is an indication that there is something missing in the fabric of this setup. It may be correctable, but it's been repeating since 2014. Kenis Melendez, who tonight picked Jordi Alba as the Heineken star of the match. I dispute what you said to me in 2012. And in all honesty, I kind of dispute Jordi Alba as man of the match. Therefore, my Bet365 man of the day is Robert Lewandowski. For my taste, he epitomised, irrespective of how well he played individually, he epitomised Poland's bullying attitude. He looked for weak spots. If he took a gentle tickle in the ear in a jump, he went down and rolled around. He made sure the referee heard his complaints all the time. But when it came to the football, if you look at his little dink at the back post in the first half that nearly brought a goal, creativity. If you look at his wonderful header, and I thought it was a wonderful header, he could really have easily had two goals tonight. I thought that Unai Simon did well to prevent him from scoring when the effort from Poland had just gone off the post. I think it was Świderski who'd hit the post. Lewandowski's following up in a way that was probably in the same blade of grass as Morata following up Gerard Moreno's missed penalty. Lewandowski took the first touch beautifully and rocketed a shot. Unai Simon bounced it off his chest, let his right hand guide it away, and it was a save. But across the match, I thought that Lewandowski was fabulous, really. There were others that stood out. Kamil Glik, who I thought might be exposed a little bit, by which I mean not personally, but because Krychowiak wasn't going to be in front of him in holding midfield. I wondered whether Kamil Glik might have a rougher time of it. He didn't. Szczesny didn't have a massive amount of work to do, although Spain had more shots on target, but I thought he did what he needed to do well. Linetti, the short time he was on the pitch, looks to me a bonny player. The fact of it is, Lewandowski was the leading player across all of those he featured tonight. He celebrated in a way that showed that he too was as relieved as Morata to finally get the goal, to get that monkey off his back. For my money, he nearly won Poland the game. For my money, he was the Bet365 man of the day. Listen, I don't know how this is going to sound when you listen to it. All I can tell you is that I am thoroughly, thoroughly ticked off. And if this were my team, there would have been some hard words said in the dressing room. And probably these poor Spaniards wouldn't have understood any of them. Buenas noches todos.